Happy New Year's, everybody. Welcome back to Fretzelmania. And I couldn't think of a better way to ring in the new year than reviewing Starrcade 1990. I am joined this week, of course, by one of my good brothers from across the wrestling podcasting landscape, and that is Kyle from the Apron Bump podcast. You can give him a follow on Twitter and Instagram at Apron Bump. His podcast can be found where all podcasts can be heard, so Apple, Spotify, all over the place, just like Wrestle Addict Radio, the cure for the common wrestling podcast. Also, apronbump.com if you'll want to go through his catalog, because Kyle, like me, is reviewing retro wrestling of a certain era, like early Ring of Honor, like Prime NWA TNA, New Generation era WWE, ECW, and WCW, and so much more, including things like Progress Wrestling. So if you like retro stuff, give Kyle a follow, give him a shot, and join us through this hilariously bumpy road as we figure out who the Black Scorpion is and why we like the USSR so much. Just listen and find out. It's Starrcade 1990, the Pat O'Connor Memorial Tag Team Tournament. Stan Hansen and Lex Luger in a bull rope match. Sting versus the mysterious Lex Luger, Ric Flair, and so much more. Strap in, folks. You're in for an apron bumpy ride. Who is the Black Scorpion? Is it the 1989 Denver Broncos? Is it Mephisto? Is it Chef? Is it Ric Flair? Is it Ollie Anderson? Or is it my guest today, my good brother from down south, from the Apron Bump podcast? Welcome to Wrestle Addict Radio's Fretzelmania number, 57? Holy crap. And Happy New Year when you're hearing this.
Thank you.
Yeah, Kyle, thanks for coming on, man. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me. It's been I've been listening for a while. It's fun to finally come on. I'm here to represent the Steiners of the Pat O'Connor tournament on this show.
Oh boy, yeah, we're gonna get there. I don't know the name of the two Canadian blokes who are in it, but I'd rather represent those Soviet guys that were in there because they were kind of badass.
Dude, they were unexpectedly awesome. I thought they were gonna be lame, but I was a big fan. Big fan.
Oh, they reminded me of like every, well, we'll get there, but there's like a heavy set weightlifter type guy that reminds me of like one of my old friends from school who was like, you look at me like I'm chunky, but that's like thick. Would that be the word to say?
Thick. Thick's the word.
Yeah, with three
two
C's.
Two C's.
Oh, three? Okay, oh, three. Only right. Three?
Look, don't let me get in the way. You know, three C's? If you think so, I'm not going to argue with it.
All right. So tell everyone here, Kyle, a bit about yourself, what you do, and how you got into wrestling.
Oh, man. Well, as far as wrestling goes, I've been watching since like 98, 99, somewhere in there. It's a little fuzzy. But got into, I was a WWF kid, watched, the Attitude Era. I'm one of those kids that grew up with that. And I've been pretty much watching ever since, and I've kind of expanded to other, independent, other wrestling promotions, which I cover in my podcast as well. But I love all kinds of wrestling. That's wrestling's like the one thing in my life that's like stayed consistent. You know, there's like sports, I'm in and out, TV shows, I'm in and out, but wrestling's a thing that I've always been into and still into this day. So, and fun fact, Starrcade 1990. The show we're covering today is the oldest wrestling show that I've ever watched from start to finish. So it was a trip watching this show.
Oh man, it was quite the treat. I've been going through your podcast as well. You've been going through about four or five different eras in wrestling all at the same time. Like you're covering a bit of New Gen right now. Mm-hmm. And I think with your New Generation, it's also following ECW, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, ECW, WCW, WWF, all. So I started in like mid 1994 and have worked my way towards where I am now, which is like mid 95. So I've covered about a year's worth of that. And it's definitely a transition period for wrestling, but it's interesting to watch like in real time, basically. So
yeah, it is. I was on with you for King of the Ring 95.
Oof. Oh, I'm sorry. I put you through that.
You know, I don't know if I mentioned it but I had a childhood obsession with tracking this pay-per-view down just because I wanted to watch everything. Like, so in 95, I was casually watching. It would be something I watched with my late father. We would, we used to have a family butcher shop with my uncle, my dad. We all, they all ran it together, and I would do chores if it was feeding the pigs or shoveling shit or bagging jerky and bacon. Our bacon was top notch, but by the way, and we'd get home for lunch and just watch it. Like, my, he didn't keep track of it, but you know, it was just something that was there, but it was through him and through my cousins who were at the farm that would get me right into that around this time. And of all places that we had our wrestling rentals was the hardware store.
Really?
Yeah.
Like our tapes there.
Yep. Well, we had it was a small town. So our hardware,
that's lawless.
It's very much so up in Southern Ontario. You could go there and rent wrestling tapes, a vast horror section, and porno. So hardware.
Well, what else do you need, really? Hardware, huh? Who's with us?
Exactly. And I hear the crickets outside my door right now.
It's funny, actually. That's similar to how I got into wrestling, too, because my dad would show me Goldberg matches because he was the hot shit at the time. So that's pretty much how I got into it. And then I would eventually stumble upon it. Me and like growing up, I don't know how this happened. I don't know if I like accidentally got access to my parents' credit card or what it was, but we would get, there was like a glitch in the system where we would get pay-per-views for free. So I think the first show I remember watching was WrestleMania. Is the Boss Man getting hanged one? Is that 15?
That's 15. That was my first
15. Yeah. That was the first show I ever watched. That's like my first, it's my first memory of wrestling. So, and my cousins too, they were big wrestling fans and they kind of like facilitated that. Cause like my dad introduced me to it. My cousins, we would like watch it together, and that kind of like built my fandom, I guess, in my early days. So it's funny how we kind of have similar paths.
Even though I might be about a decade older than you, but that's still, you know, I was
some
born.
Don't change.
That's right. I was born the same year as Hulkamania, literally 3 months after Hulk Hogan beat the Iron Sheik for the title. I came into this world.
Oh.
But I didn't know who Hulk Hogan was until about 92.
Right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know who Hulk Hogan was. I mean, I was born well past Hulkamania. So I was born around the time he went to WCW, if that tells you anything.
Okay. That's
March 93.
March. Oh, there you go. That was right around the time he beat Yoko for the title at WrestleMania 9.
Right. So I was born and then that happened. So I guess I just shook up everything and ruined wrestling for a little bit.
Right in Caesar's parking lot.
I've never seen that show, but I want to.
Don't.
Okay.
maybe when you, if you get a Patreon, put it up on there.
Yeah. I do like some, at some point, like I'd like to go just back and do random older, like out of my timeline. And that'd be a good one. If nothing else, for just the shit show that it was.
It was outrageous. Do you have a favorite match? Kings of the Rings. I'm sorry, I'm stealing kind of your first guest game here, but do you have a favorite match?
Just in general?
Yeah, in general.
Wrestling?
All time, anything.
My go-to is TLC 2 at WrestleMania 17. That's like, so there was like a period where I was like, I first got into wrestling and kind of just like had it on, watched it, but didn't really absorb it. But WrestleMania 17 is that show where it was like, okay, this is like not just a thing I have on in the background. This is a thing that I'm going to be following from week to week. So WrestleMania 17 is definitely my favorite show of all time. And if I had to pick a match, it'd probably be the TLC match, because it was just like, and I'm a big Hardy Boys mark, still am to this day. They were my favorite wrestlers growing up, so seeing them in a big match like that, and just the crazy, especially at the time, just super innovative. Even like, you know, even watching today, like it holds up today for sure. I watched it like somewhat recently. That TLC match is crazy, man, crazy.
It's a guilty pleasure. The hardcore title match from that show is just a guilty pleasure of mine.
Same. Raven driving the golf cart into the wall or whatever he did. Whole show is amazing.
He almost knocked out Power to that entire show too, with that golf cart spot.
Yeah, Tommy Dreamer almost ran in the ring and killed himself too, you know. But have you heard that story?
Oh, please elaborate before we go on here.
Oh man, well, so I have like a loose knowledge of it. I don't even know if it's like how true it is, but apparently Dreamer said in an interview, this is like, I don't know, a year or two ago, that he like pondered like showing up in the middle of a show and like shooting himself in the middle of the ring. I'm paraphrasing. Don't quote me on this, but it was something along those lines. Obviously, he didn't do it. So, but it's just one of those crazy things. It's like, what if that happened? Good thing it didn't, obviously, you know. But.
Oh, all right, on. Hey, do you want to hear what the pop culture scene was like before we get into Starrcade in 1990?
Absolutely.
Your number one movie was one that I watched, well, recently, because it's a holiday release. The first Home Alone.
You know what's funny? I have never seen Home Alone. I haven't seen number one or two. I've seen Home Alone 3. And growing up, for whatever reason, I thought that was the only Home Alone. So in my mind, that was Home Alone 1. But then literally like a week ago, it was like Christmas time. I was like, you know what? Let's watch Home Alone. And then I realized that the Home Alone in my head was the third one that nobody likes for some reason. But that's my favorite.
Is that the one that has like the Russian spies or something? Or
yes.
Oh my God. It's
not Macaulay Culkin. It's like a different kid.
No, that's the kid from Liar Liar, I think.
Is it? Yeah.
I'm certain, because Culkin was like 18 by the time that movie rolled around. So he was.
Yeah.
And not doing.
Was like 7 years after the first one.
I see. And did you know, of all people that have an album out in December 1990, was Kid Rock?
Really?
It's called Grits and Sandwiches for Breakfast.
God, Kid Rock is an asshole. I can't stand Kid Rock.
He was a guilty pleasure in high school, along with Limp Bizkit and all them. It was of the time. And Butt Rock, yes. I do love Butt Rock. Shout out to Ant and everyone at Elite POV. Good shit there, pal. Mm-hmm. We had Commander Keen for the MS-DOS, and I might be speaking gibberish here to a young fella. And one of my favorite NES games, Mega Man 3.
I never had an NES, but I've played Mega Man on like a Wii or something. It's a fun game.
Oh, they are classics. So... Starrcade 1990, we are live from St. Louis, Missouri, a historic wrestling town, and the commentary duo here, coming full circle again, Nate the Effing Great, take a shot, is JR and Paul Heyman.
Hell yeah, man. I was pleasantly surprised to see these two. I like sometimes forget that they did commentary together, because I associate them with like 2001 commentary in WWF. And they're like one of my favorite duos, so I was excited to see them.
I was pleasantly surprised. I love JR and Heyman. I wish they had more of a run in the company, and say with this invasion angle, if I were to dust off the fantasy book here for a second, you have WCW win, you get a power struggle, and then say WrestleMania, you have the War Games blow off, and that's when you get King coming back. But we have here opening the show is historic wrestling promoter Sam Mushnick cutting a promo here amidst one of many problems they would have tonight here with audio issues. I couldn't understand a damn word he said, but St. Louis is historic, and he's not to be confused with Phil Mushnick. Ask Jim Cornette about him, or don't. You might get blocked.
Was this, didn't they say on commentary that this is like the last show ever in this arena?
I think it was. This might have been one of those old arenas that got torn down. I'm pretty sure the St. Louis Blues played there.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe the I don't think the Cardinals would have played there, but we get here advertisements for what is going to be taking over this whole night, the Pat O'Connor Memorial Tag Team Tournament. Now Pat O'Connor is a old school historic wrestler going back to I think even the Hackenschmidt days, where he was consecutively the AWA and NWA champion. Eat your heart out, Nick Bockwinkel. Opening the show, this was a banger here. We had beautiful Bobby Eaton, who we recently lost, RIP. versus the Z-Man, or if you're a Canadian, the Z-Man, Tom Zenk. And how did you like the Starrcade stats here, Kyle?
I hated them. They were like, they're like, because JR would just read them. Like, I don't know if you've ever like been in school. Maybe I was like, you know, before or after your time. But when I went to college, there were some classes where a teacher would just have PowerPoints on the screen and they would just read it word for word. Yep. It's like, if you have the words there, I can read it. You don't need to say it. And that's how it's kind of felt here. I was like, this could have been stuff that JR said without the graphic, in my opinion. It was kind of silly. But I guess maybe they're, I don't know if this is a new thing they're trying out or what, but if it was, I don't blame them for trying something.
I think this was when Jim Herd took over the company. And if that name rings any bells, this is the same guy who told Ric Flair to dress up like Spartacus, and Flair said, fuck that, I'm going to the WWE.
Well, it makes sense then with that context. It's no Matt Fax, though. It's no Matt Hardy V1. Matt Fax, right? Is that what it's called?
Matt Fax. Matt Hardy strongly dislikes mustard.
Yeah. So it's good that they... it's actually funny. Like, it's not that different because they do it nowadays, right? When the wrestlers come out and they had like the little graphic and it's like... Oh, they have some stupid ones. They'll be like who they're dating or...
still drinking.
Yeah, exactly. Some things don't change again.
Or doesn't think Die Hard is a Christmas movie and they're wrong.
Ooh.
That's fighting words here. So Zenkman here has been on a 35-0 winning streak. I guess this is where Bill Goldberg got his idea. Did you notice that Nick Patrick was reffing this match?
I think I did. Yeah, I saw him throughout the show. Looking pretty similar to how he always looked.
Oh, yeah. But we had a pretty good high-flying match here. There was a nice crossbody by Zenk, a big scoop slam, a nice drop kick, and a zuplex. I wrote this down as zuplex, spelling suplex with the Z. Suplex to the outside, and this is where, in a show I reviewed previously on this channel, where something going over the top rope was a disqualification, which is the dumbest rule that wrestling has ever put out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a disqualification because Zenk was on the outside of the ring, and I think he suplexed Bobby Eaton or vice versa, but I guess it's not a DQ.
That's so stupid.
And JR calls Paul Heyman here, and I quote, a psycho ceramic crackpot.
I bet he had that one written down. He's just waiting to unleash it.
That is a very funny one here. We have Bobby going for the Bulldog and Alabama Jam. Like, the master of the top rope leg drop here was Bobby Eaton.
Beautiful. The most beautiful leg drop you'll ever see.
Like, it's like not even like, God rest his soul, Brian Christopher, his has got to be like a runner up.
Yeah, you know, another one, Kenny from the Spirit Squad had a really good one, too.
I just remembered that because I was thinking, like, who else did? Well, Fandango did it, but he tried to be Kenny Dykstra, but it just didn't land.
Mm. You got to think, though, a leg drop from the top rope has got to be one of the most, like over time, one of the most, like, detrimental moves to do. Because, like, Matt Hardy, he's come out and said that his, like, his back is fused to his pelvis or something. And even, like, Hulk Hogan doing it just from standing up, he's all messed up now because of that.
Well, Hulk Hogan said he shrunk like 2 inches because of it.
I bet.
Yeah, not in the place where you think, but we see a really nice spot here where Eaton gets crotched on the ring pole here. A super kick, a missile drop kick that hit nobody, and then eventually Bobby Eaton here hits a cradle and a win. What did you think of this opening match?
Honestly, like, It's tough to really say because there's like 14 matches on this card in less than 3 hours. But this might be my match of the night, honestly, just from the pure like action in the ring. Really did a good job setting the tone for the show because I turned this on. Like I said, I've never watched a show from 1990. So I was like, ugh, like I'm picturing in my head like black and white, you know, Haystacks Calhoun type stuff. But I was pleasantly surprised. It was very ahead of its time. Beautiful Bobby, one of the best of all time. And then Z-Man. Don't know that much about him, but he seemed like he was moving around really well, especially for the time, doing like all the cross bodies and springboards and stuff. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good, that was a solid match. Solid match.
Yeah. Tom Zenk actually tagged with Rick Martel at the opening match of WrestleMania 3 as well. So it shows you where he came from here. Tony Schiavone here is interviewing legendary wrestler Dick the Bruiser, who is going to be the guest referee for our steel cage match main event between Sting and the Black Scorpion. Oh, we're going to get there.
Can we not?
Well, can
we just glaze over that? Pretend it didn't happen.
I'll just hit stop recording around that point.
Perfect.
He calls himself Bruiser here, calls himself the champion of cage matches. And he claims that there was more than one Black Scorpion, and there is.
And too many.
Yeah. And now kicks off the Pat O'Connor Memorial Tag Team Tournament with a parade of flags. This is just a bunch of ladies in evening gowns running flags down the ring.
Can I tell you my favorite part about that?
Oh,
is that each one would come down like one by one, and it was funny just to see which ones got booed. Soviet Union and Japan got booed too. Like, I don't know, still sour about Pearl Harbor, I guess. But that was very interesting how that was presented.
I was totally expecting Canada to get boos here, but I was pleasantly surprised. And the winner of this tournament would become the Universal Champion.
Wait, really?
Or the head of the I wrote down here the Universal Tag Team Champions. A young Roman Reigns just nods. probably backstage at this event. Offa was probably there because the head shrinkers, like Fatu, was working for the company at that time.
Yeah, they should have had a Samoan team. They could have replaced like New Zealand or somebody with that.
Yeah, because New Zealand New Zealand and South Africa, I think both had Americans on their team because I guess there wasn't enough to go around.
By the way, how do they, because all these teams had seeds, like they had 1 through 8. How do they determine that? Is that like how their economy's doing or like their social well-being of the country? Like how do they come up with these seeds for these teams?
Well, I think the USSR would come dead last in that because they would crumble like less than a year after this. But it was probably like a random drawing, kind of like maybe a King of the Ring thing, because they won other matches previous to this in order to qualify. So they probably had 10 other countries. We probably had like Brazil. They looked at the map in Street Fighter 1, which wasn't even out yet by this point in time, and just and went that from there. Sense. Our opening quarterfinal match is South Africa's Colonel de Klerk and Sergeant Kruger. Fun fact, Colonel de Klerk is Rocco Rock.
Is he really?
Yes.
Wow, I need to go rewatch this now with that context.
Versus the Steiner brothers, both teams. A theme throughout the night is these teams are coming out to their country's national anthem. And Kruger, I was trying to figure out who Kruger was. I thought he was Matt Bourne, a.k.a. Heel Doink, but I could not find a damn thing on him. And this match was a giant mess. And there was a very infamous GIF. Or however the shit you pronounce GIF during this match, where
I know what you're talking about.
One of the guys here, I think it was de Klerk, goes for a dive to the outside, but Rick Steiner kind of half catches him, no sells him, and just blaps, power bombs him right on the concrete.
I don't even consider it a power bomb. He just pretty much just. De Klerk just went over the top rope and bounced off of Rick Steiner and went headfirst into the concrete.
Just disgusting. Classic Steiner. I want to see if they have like Bron Breakker pull out something like this in NXT. That would get me to watch NXT again, is if Bron Breakker like does that once.
Yeah. Well, there's still time. He's still very young in his career, so I don't doubt that at all.
I think he's going to win the title next week, but that's...
I do too.
Neither here nor there, and I don't want to think about it because Black and Gold was my jam. But what wasn't Black and Gold here, or what could have turned a guy Black and Gold, was a Steiner line, a Tilt-A-Whirl Frankensteiner, a Tilt-A-Whirl Slam, then a Frankensteiner, and a theme throughout this night. I think. Have you noticed that some of the pinfalls here were kind of botched or mistimed or effed up? This was one of them.
I made a note of that as well. I didn't know if that was just like a thing people did during this time, because they would, like you said, he hit the Frankensteiner. 1, 2, and then he just hops off, like, yeah, we won. And then the ref just counts the third one, even though he's not on him. But the crowd doesn't care. They just saw a Frankensteiner and they're like, yeah, that's probably it. Let's get these what country is it? New Zealand? No.
South Africa.
South Africa. Let's get these South African guys out of here. Don't need this Rocco Rock public enemy ass.
Get them in the Truth Commission.
Yeah.
That's who they should have had out here. What with that friggin' interrogator? Not. Nah. I'm trying to think of that sergeant guy who was in the Truth Commission, not General Adnan. It'll come to me like in 10 hours, but
yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, here, moving on. The UK. Not Craig Pittman. That's what you're reviewing. The Commandant. Right. There he is.
There we go. Jostled it loose for you.
That's right there. Now this one. This next one was a banger because we had four of the best workers of the time. We had the UK's gentleman Chris Adams and Norman Smiley. Yes, that Norman Smiley versus Rey Mysterio Sr. and Conan. Now, Chris Adams is a UK wrestler. I think he went on to work for WCW for a little bit after this. He was the first person I saw do the super kick, not Shawn Michaels, not Glacier. But it was Chris Adams. And I believe that Stone Cold Steve Austin dated his ex-wife or something like that. The blonde British lady that coined the term Stone Cold is this person here. And of course, Norman Smiley would go on to WCW infamy during its dying days and is still to this day at the Performance Center. Just a legend in the industry.
The Big Wiggle.
A Big Wiggle. I'll never forget the Big Wiggle with a football gear on and a Leafs jersey because they were in Toronto. And that was the night that Bret Hart got speared with the suit of armor.
That's the most WCW thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh yeah. Maybe I'll bring in one of those shows, but
yeah.
Norman Smiley here is just a fantastic like chain wrestler, ground wrestler. Chris Adams here, the super kick to Mysterio on the outside. Smiley with a really good fisherman suplex. Team Mexico here. I should have mentioned here that Mexico is Mysterio and Conan, but that's probably a given.
Pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, pretty self-explanatory. Mysterio gets a nice bump here on the steps. There's the really cool finish here that reminded me of Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas with the super kick German combo. And I think this is where the UK gets the win. Oh, no, they don't. I went in too further in my notes here, and I look like an idiot when I record, and that's just how I go. Adams
we're
here.
We're live, pal.
We're live, pal. Shit, Sid. A sling blade I saw Chris Adams pull out here looked really good. And Conan reverses a top rope suplex, and the Mexicools here win this match. And then at the end, for no reason, Rey Mysterio just dives on a guy.
Dude, this match was like it's four talented guys, but this is kind of a wonky one. First of all, I saw this card. Like, I looked at all the matches. I was like, Rey Mysterio was wrestling in 1990. Was this guy 13 wrestling in WCW? But it's his uncle actually, Rey Mysterio. So it's interesting. I've never seen him wrestle. So this was quite the. You kind of gather why Rey Mysterio Jr. is the more famous one. But it was fun. Chris Adams, I've only heard of him through Steve Austin stories. And it's Conan. He's the timeless, whether it's here or TNA in 2005 or wherever, anywhere in between. He's pretty much the same wherever you see him. But he's entertaining, that's for sure. One note, though, here. So no one knew what Rey Mysterio's last name was. Because I don't know if you noticed, but the graphic, like when he came out, said Rey Mysteriac. It had like a C instead of an O. And I guess it was on the notes of the commentary, too, because JR kept calling him Rey Mysteriac. And Paul Heyman, you can hear him correct him, Mysterio. And then like the ring announcer calls him Rey Mysterioso. And then JR's like, yeah, Rey Mysterioso. I was like, that was kind of a mess. But it's funny in hindsight, because now that name is so famous.
Yeah, this was a really, really fun match here. It was a great clash of styles with like your more ground type wrestlers with your high flyers. This was something that could have been found like right on the Hart Family Dungeon.
Yeah, this is probably one of, if not the best tournament match of the card.
It might be my favorite one here. And oh boy, do you like computers predicting outcomes, Kyle?
Oh, yeah, especially when it's like an Etch-a-Sketch that they're holding. It's 1990. Like, I don't know what computers looked like back then, but I doubt it was that.
Have you ever used MS-DOS?
I have not.
Okay, yeah. It's like that or a Commodore 64, if you've ever seen them. That's what computers were like back then. Very primitive, loud, and big.
Right, yeah. It was a big... Yeah, the computer predicted that IRS would win. So, computer doesn't lie.
In 8 minutes and 32 seconds or less. How specific.
Yeah, the technology, man. It's ahead of its time.
Yeah, this was, of course, an interview with Alexandra York, who would go on to be who?
I don't know.
Marlena.
Oh, man. I was watching her. I was like, why does she look so familiar? I forgot to look it up. But yeah, now that you say that. That makes sense. That makes sense.
She had her stable here, the York Foundation. Speaking of Austin, I think Austin was in the York Foundation for a brief spell here. And VK Wall Street, that of course is the future IRS, who would actually be in the WWE like 5-6 months after this.
Yeah, I believe it. I knew because he's Michael Wall Street here, right? And I knew about VK Wall Street after his WWF run, but I never knew about this iteration of him. So it was interesting.
He had just come out of the Varsity Club with Rick Steiner, Kevin Sullivan, and Dr. Death Steve Williams. So this was him switching up his gimmick right. A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. New Zealand's Rip Morgan and Jacko Victory.
This is the worst wrestling name I've ever heard in my life. Jacko Victory.
Take out the O, and this is ECW's Jack Victory, who was like a heavy right. for Steve Corino.
Right. That's the same guy, right?
It's the same guy. Jack Victory was okay. actually also in the new Midnight Express.
Yikes.
Because I think it was Condry or someone was injured. It was one of my other previous shows. Going up against the Great Muta. And the man named after that suplex, Mr. Saito.
Yes.
And Jacko, is that offensive? Is that...
Depends how you say it.
Maybe jack like, off, but...
Jacko's fine. Jacko is a little rough.
We'll have to get one of our Australian listeners on this one, but... This match was kind of sloppy here. We had Great Muta. He did a really nice flying attack to Jacko on the outside. They call Saito the suplex master. Taz is taking notes here. Muta with a great spinning kick. And that, that handspring elbow that like every female started doing after China.
Yeah, but no one's ever done it as good as Muta here.
China actually landed it pretty okay, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, not too bad.
We have the Saito suplex and another botched pinfall. Another weird, sloppy, quick match.
Yeah. No time for that third count. We got a lot of matches to get through. It's just bing, bang, just two count, get out of here.
Yeah, just set it up on a two count in Fire Pro Wrestling. You can actually do that.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Mr. Saito is a hoss. I don't know if I've ever actually seen him wrestle, but that is a girthy boy.
He's right around the
muscle.
He is. He's right around the end of his career because in like the 70s, he was a multi-time tag team champion with Mr. Fuji.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Now that you say that, that jogs my memory. But yeah, the Saito suplex is like low key one of my favorite moves. I love a good snappy one. So I was happy to see the originator here.
He was good. Paul Heyman here with that comically large cell phone. He's trying to do. Bad Japanese English.
That's my my personal Twitter, which I don't really use anymore, but my Twitter handle is Spica da English because I'm Filipino and everybody thinks I'm Japanese for some reason.
Oh my. And I think he was trying to cut a promo here with Team Japan, and everything was getting lost in translation. And now, okay, now we're talking Team Canada, except there's no hockey sticks. There's no flags.
No Eric Young, no A1.
No Scott D'Amore, no Petey Williams. I haven't heard of either of these guys, and I'm the Canadian wrestling historian here. So we have Bull Johnson and Troy Montour going up against USSR's Victor Zangief and Salaman Hashnikov. And yes, Victor Zangief is the namesake for Street Fighter's Zangief.
Oh, of course. Is he really?
He actually is. He really is.
Oh, wow. That's a fun fact.
Yeah, when I was researching that, I thought, oh, that was kind of cool. We have Bullwhip Johnson. I think he was the fellow dressed up in the native headdress here. A native Canadian, I guess, is what you would say.
Is that what native Canadians look like? Do they look like Tatanka?
No. I actually live within like a couple of kilometers of an Indian reserve.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like half of the beach I'm on is like there's been like this land dispute going on for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Just about the beach, like not the street that I'm on, but it's First Nations. It's Bull Johnson here. They said that he died with a remote control in his hand because he loved TV so much. That's the one headline when I was trying to research him that came up.
What a legacy.
Because the remote might have just been a new thing at this point in time. Like this fangled device right here. Like I remember, you know, turning the dial on the TV. I am actually that old.
Back in my day.
Yeah. Oh, it's Troy that's the native Canadian. I'm sorry. But Zangief here, he's a very, very hairy man.
I've never seen anybody more hairy in my life.
Wait till you get to Los Barriquas. Yeah, Miguel Perez. Just look up that one. They're right up there with A-Train and Robin Williams in terms of body right. hair level.
A-Train has nothing on Zangief. You could braid all of his hairs.
He's that big burly fellow that I told you that reminded me of somebody here. And they're really putting over USR's amateur wrestling background. And you can tell with the way they were just hoying these guys around.
Yeah, they were legit. That's for sure.
Yeah, I actually tried wrestling in high school, and they reminded me of like the big dudes that were on the team. And I'm like, no, okay, I'm done.
Yeah,
because I wanted
for me
because I wanted to do it. I really did. But Hashnikov here hits a really beautiful, crisp waistlock suplex that resulted in another effed up pinfall.
Yep. What was? Because I put in my notes that there was a botched finish, but I forget what it was exactly.
I think it could have been like, I didn't write it down either, but maybe it could have been either like the shoulder was up too soon or the three count was messed up again. But it's just a general theme throughout this whole show.
I think this is the one where it was like a four count or something. I don't know. It was the refing and the pins were, it feels like a thing that should be easy, but I guess maybe it's not. I don't know. It didn't seem like it in this show.
It might have been like the scab referees like they had for Unforgiven 99.
Who could forget?
Yeah, that's the same historic event as the Kettle from Hell. Just wait till you get there.
I've seen it before. But 1999 had a lot of stinkers across all companies.
I watched most of those pay-per-views live.
I'm sorry.
Because I think, what you said is you can get pay-per-views for free. I had buddies that had like those little cards you put in your satellite dish receiver and then boom, free wrestling.
Yeah. Well, you got it. Your money's worth.
Indeed. Sting has an interview here saying that anything can happen. He has a clear head and he's going to find out who the Black Scorpion is. And we're about to find out here. So
can't
now we
wait.
It's going to be good. Sorry, the audio here is coming and going. So it sounds like I'm interrupting you, but.
Oh, no, you're good on my end.
Okay. I have really shitty internet here, but speaking of shitty internet, the York Foundation and their computer to predict outcomes. Michael Wall Street and Terry, don't call me the Red Rooster Taylor.
So that's as somebody that was born in 93, that's pretty much all I associate Terry Taylor with. So, yeah. It's funny. Really play into my how I enjoyed this match.
Terry Taylor actually had a singles run in the WWE in 93. Fun fact.
I'm not interested.
No, it's nothing from that point is, but we have the, imagine a computer using to generate incomes. Imagine stats. Like, even thinking about that in 1990, like the internet was barely even a thing with 2021, 2022 eyes by the time you people hear that's Happy New Year. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing, but you have to put yourself in the perspective of back then thinking, holy crap, computers can do that. We have this count, the clock starts counting down from 8:32.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's an arbitrary number.
Well, no, 8:32 is the time that it was predicted by the computer that he would beat him in within that time. So it's not like any match on the show other than the main event lasted longer than that. So
yeah, there's one here that's just going to be second tier, but we have the classic abdominal stretch heel tactic with the ropes by Wall Street. Terry Taylor with the babyface trope of being a house of fire for the last 3 minutes. Did I hear myself say 3 minutes? we see the flying, not the forearm, the five arm.
Of course, because it's a little bit better. 20% better.
Yeah, it's a little bit better. Not as good as Tito Santana's or friggin' Lex Luger's Bionic One.
But Austin Harry's also had a five arm, a discus five arm.
That's right, he did. I think that's Austin Starr, right?
He brought it back for a little bit in WWE as well, but it might have been Austin Starr as well.
We have the hot shot on the rope here, the classic, you know, the Steve Austin stun gun hot shot. The hot shot, good Lord. The stock market crash, which is just your run-of-the-mill Samoan drop. And with 142 to spare, the computer was right. And Wall Street is the winner.
Computer doesn't lie. That is a cool name for a finisher, especially with this character, the stock market crash. I dig it. You know, IRS, I could do without. But for an IRS match, it was fine. You know, it's what, 6 minutes?
Yeah, he is actually an accomplished amateur wrestler. Like, when he wants to be good in the ring, he can friggin' go. Just not when you're dressed in layers and dripping like a Christmas ham.
Did he have he didn't have suspenders in this match, right? It was like a singlet.
It was just it was just a regular amateur singlet.
Okay, yeah. So that's why he won this match and why he never wins in WWF later, is because he wrestles in suspenders and he always gets it used against him. So he kind of degressed in that aspect.
Yes. This next match here, this is right up my alley here because it has one of my all-time favorites. We have the Skyscrapers versus the Motor City Madman and the Big Cat, not that Big Cat Ernie Ladd. Mm-mm. who I think was actually Mr. Hughes.
Was it? That makes sense. I didn't catch that, but yeah, now that you say that, I can see that.
Yes, I thought it was Ice Train here at first, but I upon further inspection, it was Mr. Hughes. Sid and Dan Spivey as the Skyscrapers. Here we have Sid, who was just basically getting his career underway in WCW at this point in time. Dan Spivey was basically a veteran by this point in time. They, of course, would also have the Skyscrapers with Mean Mark Callis just after Sid starts his singles role here. Oh, but yeah.
I didn't know Undertaker was a part of that.
Just before coming to the WWE, he did that. And
that's awesome.
This was just a quick old squash match here. We have Sid and Dan Spivey hitting a really wicked double powerbomb on the Madman and just cut, print, it's over.
I think the entrances were longer than the match itself.
Yeah, what do you
case, but
what do you think of the Skyscrapers, Kyle?
Oh man, it's so interesting to see like who was over at this time, because it's a toss-up between Sid and Lex Luger, who got the biggest react, I guess Sting too. But the crowd loved Sid much more than Waylon Mercy here. But yeah, the Skyscraper, the two big bastards. I mean, I could see, you know, a little small hardest part of the ring in the crowd loving that team. So there was a squash match, like a deadlift powerbomb for the finish was super impressive, because doing it on Motor City Madman, who had to be like close to 300. Super impressive, and is lots of Ico Pro all around. So, big fan of it.
Yeah, I loved it, and I really love that they interviewed Heyman afterwards, and they brought him up to eye level by just grabbing him by the scruff of his neck.
Yeah, get up here, you little bitch boy.
And they have this one-shot deal, and we decide, you know, how we want to go into 1991. And 1991 is when Sid comes to the WWE, so we know how that happens.
Oh, man, really? Is it like right after?
SummerSlam 91, Sid's the guest referee on the match made in hell.
Can't wait for that.
Speaking of can't wait, here we have Tommy Rich and Ricky Morton. Tommy Rich, of course, is replacing the injured Robert Gibson. The Rock and Roll Express versus the Freebirds, a classic. Baddest street in the whole USA. Oh, man. Michael. It still slaps. Michael P.S. Hayes with Little Richard. Not that Little Richard.
Yeah, I saw it on the card. I was like, wait. Is there a crossover? I guess Little Richard, didn't he do like a like the national anthem for WrestleMania or something?
Well, that's the Little Richard. This is Little Richard.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Probably like a Ralphus kind of guy.
Yeah, he's like a who do you think's better? Because Little Richard here is a roadie, right? For the Freebirds. Who do you think would win in a match between Little Richard and Road Dogg?
Well, in a match, Road Dogg, but we get if you have like an actual roadie contest here where you get, I don't know, who can gather up cables the fastest or do the best mic check or whatever, I might have to give the edge to Richard here because he performs his duties quite dutifully, I should say here.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Hayes and Jimmy Garvin here are in face paint for some reason, even though I think, yeah, they're the heels because Rock and Roll doesn't work heel like ever. Like they're the ultimate baby face team.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They had the Confederate flag on their face, which if they came out nowadays with that they'd definitely be heels.
Depending on where you'd be, maybe.
Yeah. That's a good point.
We still see that decal to this day, but you know, people like, oh, Dukes of Hazzard. I'm not getting into that argument.
The whole other podcast itself.
Oh, come on. I met Bo Duke. He's awesome. But we have here a reverse atomic drop on Hayes. Like I love when people can sell a good atomic drop just comically.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like a Rick Rude or somebody.
Like I know people who have a YouTube show called The Wrestling Show. It's actually what Nate the Effing Great does. Mm-hmm. And there's people on there where like this guy and his wife, just they do all this wrestling. And then unsuspectedly, the buddy comes up to his wife, lifts her up and then drops her with the atomic drop.
and show her.
Matt and Kate Jones, just they're selling, like, I don't know if they're trained pros, but they get it. And we have Gibson here nailing Hayes, a spot here where there's a double figure four. The new Rock and Roll Express here has a lot of control until handsome Doc Hendricks comes in and bulldogs Morton. Little Richard tries to attack them but gets a knee drop from the top. Gibson stops Morton at a point here and reverse roll up, and the Rock and Roll Boys win. After the match here, the Freebirds take out their frustrations on Little Richard, nailing a double DDT on the poor sucker.
Yeah. First of all, they kept calling the Rock and Roll Express Rich and Morton. And every time they said it, I thought of Rick and Morty. So it was like tripping me up watching this.
We went back
Rick and Morty.
We went back in time too far, Morty. Oh.
But yeah, it was a good little match here. He had like it was a Gibson because he had his crutch and he crutched Little Richard. That was fun. So it's like Rick and Morty win, but they don't help Little Richard, and then like, or they don't help Gibson. Wait, who gets DDT? There's so much happening here.
Little Richard gets DDT'd after this.
Right. That's right. It's like they don't help Little Richard until after he gets DDT. It's like, why do you all of a sudden care now that he's, I don't know. But it is what it is.
No, it was like, did you watch Dynamite last night?
I did.
So it was kind of like Chris Jericho's extremely late entrance with Eddie Kingston and LAX.
Yep.
And then Eddie Kingston gets pissed off. I want to see that match, Eddie and Jericho.
Be interesting. Be interesting for sure.
Yeah. What's also interesting here is Stan the Lariat, the man Hansen, having an interview here and just hawing on tobacco. Take it away, Kyle.
Oh, this guy, dude. Look, I like Stan Hansen. I love a big clothesline-y type of wrestler. That's like kind of my jam. But why does this dude have dip spit just streaming down his chest? Like he has 50 chawls of spit in his mouth, and it's just like cascading down his chest. He looks like an idiot. He looks like an idiot. This Stan Hansen does.
This might be where Undertaker got his idea to start hawing tobacco on Raw.
Yeah, but he at least kept it in his mouth and didn't just have a stroke and make it like come down his face and his chin like a doofus.
He did make Tommy Dreamer drink the spit once.
Yeah, that famous gif.
Oh, boy. And this is going to be a lariat match, which is just, what is it, like a bull rope match kind of deal here with Lex Luger. And we're not going to have a three count. We're not going to have a five count. No, he wants a four count.
Yeah, which is that's because bull rope matches have different rules like across the years. But that's in my head, that's what a bull rope match or a strap match, touch all four corners, get the win. That's what makes it fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, like what was this one that here that had kind of a dusty finish? Was it Eddie and JBL?
That was my first ever wrestling show, Great American Bash 2004. Got to witness that. And it was like Eddie like he dragged JBL, and like JBL would touch the corner behind him. And then by the time they got to the last one, like Eddie hit a splash in the corner and knocked JBL into it. And that's what made him win. So
that's what won him the title, right?
Yes. Yep.
Oof. That's a rough one.
That was a rough one. That whole show was rough.
Oh yeah. Just hats off to both the US and UK variant of the Ruthless Aggression podcast guys who are going through this. One of them is about to hit SummerSlam 04, and one of them is about to hit, I think, No Way Out
05.
Yeah. I haven't heard from Michael Ragg and the UK boys in a while. Hope they're okay.
Yeah. I think they're coming back sometime soon because they just did Armageddon 04. I guess it was probably a few months ago at this point, but
I think I heard New Year's Rev they had too, and one of the guys from the US just had a baby, so shout out to Levi. Congrats, bud.
Awesome.
Yeah. And we have a rough one here with the semifinal match between Team USA and Team Mexico. Rey and Conan, not that Rey and Conan, not the Filthy Animals, although Filthy Animals versus the Steiners, I'd be all up for. Steiner with a really nice bulldog on K-Dog. Mysterio gets tagged in here, and a young Kevin Owens takes notes here because Rick lands a really crisp pop-up powerbomb for the win.
Onto Rey Mysterio.
Mr. Mysterio here, who was the bloke that played Mysterio in the last Spider-Man movie? It was against that guy.
Oh, I'm not sure. But yeah, they still haven't fixed the graphic. Nobody knows what his name is still, but you probably won't need to know it in the future. It's fine.
Yeah, they're eliminated. It's okay.
Yeah, but man, that doomsday bulldog that the Steiners do is always, always beautiful. The Conan Mysterio versus Steiners, you see that on paper, you'll probably think it's Rey Mysterio Jr. and you'll probably think it's great, but this was not. So it was fine for what it was. Watching the Steiners throw people around. I mean, I'm sorry. Watching the Breaker Brothers throw people around is always a fun time.
It is very good. Next up, we have the Horsemen talking about this limo ride incident. So there's been this whole deal about, I don't know, this limo was commandeered or something. And Ric Flair was supposed to be in the tag team title match later on the show with the Horsemen versus Doom, which any other day of the week, any iteration of the Horsemen versus Ron Simmons and Butch Reed, sign me the hell up. But This was so friggin' weird. It's like this limo gets stopped. These, I don't know, these ruffians, these rednecks or something, just pop out of the redneck and attacking. And out of nowhere, you see Teddy Long brandishing a gun for some reason.
Yeah, I was so confused by all of this.
I don't know. I was like, wrote down was limo ride, Teddy Long with a gun, and Ric Flair is written off the tag team title match. Gee, I wonder why.
Now hold that, player.
Oh, they're gonna have a tag team match, player. Speaking of a speaking of a tag team match here, we got Team USSR and Team Japan, player. Holla holla. Zangief and Hamnisimov. These guys are becoming my favorite dark horse tag team in this whole thing. Like, I want to see more. I want to see them like go for a run with the titles. Like, what was, yeah, the Gulf War was a thing at this point in time. So take advantage of heat like that, but with the USSR, like USSR crumbles. Yeah, we're still the Soviet Union. We're the champions. Take advantage of that kind of heat.
Hell yeah.
But they're going up against another country that had heat at this point in time with Japan. So Mr. Saito and the Great Muta again, Great Muta, of course, you know, doing his spit of the mist in the air bit. Like, Hamnisimov here with just the most gorgeous overhead Tazplex.
Dude, Hashmikov, that's his name, right? He's the shorter, stronger one, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah, both these guys. I mean, they're like, you can almost compare them a little bit to the Alpha Academy nowadays, yes. Chad Gable and Otis.
Yes.
Like a blend between them and the, oh my God, Simon Gotch, Aiden English.
Vaudevillains.
Yes. A little bit of those teams like kind of mashed into one. And I thought they were great.
I just saw this team for the first time on Dark the other night, but I'm also thinking like maybe a bit of Bear Country as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that. It's just a team that looks like they're about to go wrestle some bears.
Oh man. Forget sending Hook, send Hamishkov. Like seriously.
I'd buy that shirt.
Send Hamishkov. Yeah. There's something that's going on in the shop in the new year, folks. Keep an eye out for it. Really nice belly to belly. Saito Lariat and a Saito suplex. And unfortunately our Russian boys are out here. We have Team Japan going off to the finals. And for some reason I wrote down Pearl Harbor and I'm just going to brush past that.
I'm sure, you know, Pearl Harbor, make your own joke. Everybody listeners.
You know, Pearl Harbor and wrestling get jumped from behind. That's what some random commentator, this Japanese gimmick, jump someone from behind and all they said is shout Pearl Harbor. Now, when you hear that in wrestling, that's all you hear. And I wrote down here, I loved the Soviets. Doom, I think, has a interview here. Homie don't play dat is all I heard from this interview. Just
damn.
There wasn't enough damn for this one. Not but all. There's not enough damn for this one because we have Lex Luger versus Stan Hansen versus the U.S. title in a Lariat match / bull rope match. And oh boy, just Hansen here was just ending his career in America because he would go on to have a big run in Japan with and against people like Big Van Vader, Giant Bernard, just an absolute icon, legend. One of the best classic heels in the biz too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Big Stan Hansen guy when he's not dribbling dip spit down his chest,
which he was during this entire match. I think a big cigar hanging out of his mouth, just doing a 2-for-1 for your tobacco content here.
God, the cartoon character, the Stan Hansen.
And he's like, was it a big Tex or someone from one of those old cartoons? Yeah. Hansen chokes Luger with the rope here, and this match here, it's all Stan Hansen, just chair, guardrail spots, a belly to back suplex. Luger has a leg drop. He goes for the four pads. He gets three of them, but is sent into the fourth. And at the same time this goes down, there is a ref bump. And then Stan Hansen gets the boot out. He hits the four posts and apparently retains his U.S. title. But no, hold on a minute, playa. Out comes another referee to reverse the decision. There's no instant replay because, I mean, it would take days to get the tape back for instant replay in 1990.
Right. Yeah, why doesn't this happen like more often? Like a ref doesn't see it, but another ref did, so they just switched the decision after the fact. It's like, why even have the ref bump if that's going to be the thing that happens?
Just have a second ref on the outside, or it's like in hockey. You have the referee and you have the linesman.
Mm-hmm.
So you have something like that.
This match was great, though, especially like when Luger hit three posts and he was like just reaching for that fourth one. Like the crowd was super hot for it. I thought the drama of it was great. And when Luger finally hit it, the pop, it was probably the biggest pop of the night. So this is probably the first match that lasted longer than like 5 minutes. But it was kind of a brawl for the most part. But towards the end, I thought it was some good shit, pal.
It's we're on the Luger train now because he's moving his way up the card. He'd be a champion not long after this, I don't think. But unless it was not long after this, he also had the motorcycle accident that sidelined him for a year, and then he went to the WWE. And you're just wrapping up his career, I think, right now. Like Allied Powers aren't a thing for very much longer.
Yeah, because I'm like a month or two before Nitro, and that's when he shows up. So. Yeah, kind of tying the knot on Luger, but so in this match he didn't have the plate in his arm.
No, I think he got in an accident around 91-92. Like if you've seen it, Luger actually appears via video at WrestleMania 8, but this was when Vince McMahon had the World Bodybuilding Foundation as well. Oh, Gary Stridham. Yeah. Just
it's pretty good, Vince.
I try. But he wouldn't debut for the company like wrestling wise until like Rumble 93, WrestleMania 9.
And then we're on the Lex Express.
We need a hero. Bringing it back to King Mabel here.
Yuck.
that was like one of the first wrestling VHSs I ever watched was SummerSlam 93.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it. Isn't that the one where didn't Diesel debut there or something?
He was a heavy for Michaels. Like, no, he debuted on Raw.
I see.
When him and Jannetty traded the title back and forth.
Right. How could I forget?
Yeah, I listen to a lot of Cultaholic Classic Raw reviews, so I get my fill from there. Shout out Tom Campbell.
Yeah.
Oh, and you want a good shout out here? We have the Four Horsemen, represented by Arn Anderson without a Glock and Barry Windham versus Doom. I think this was for the titles, if I'm not mistaken. Doom here is Ron Farouk Simmons and Hacksaw Butch Reed in a street fight. And Arn, just the funny visual here with Arn, like he can be unintentionally funny here. He is wrestling in jeans with knee pads over the jeans.
You gotta protect your knees.
Well, that's true, but it's a very funny visual.
He's gotta let everybody know that he's wearing knee pads.
Indeed. We have a schmoz here. Nothing but chairs, ring posts, and this is a hardcore brawl from like 99-2000 here with the title on the line. Butch Reed here gets the belt buckle and starts digging in on Barry, which I guess cuts him open hard way or blades him or something. Arn whips Reed. There's a really the spine busters, not only by Simmons, but Arn as well. Like both of these two lads can kill
the best and the best spine busters in wrestling.
The best. There's press slams and beat downs. Ron goes to the top. There's a low blow, superplex, and nobody kicks out of the Barry Windham superplex. Oh, wait. No, he just did. Reed goes up to the top rope for the super shoulder block on Arn. There's a chair shot. There's a kick out. There's pile drivers. There's DDTs. And then there's a bit here where a member from each team pins the other member from each team. Damn it, Nick Patrick pins them both. And it takes so fucking long for the decision to be made here as to who's the winner. And it's a draw.
Windham had the pin way before Ron Simmons did, but we don't pay attention to that.
It was, yeah, but how'd you like this match?
Again, it was kind of, I think it's a weird decision having this right after the bull rope match, because they both felt like just brawls, like all around the ring. So it kind of blended together for me. But I like all four of these guys. Really cool to see Ron Simmons here, and like I don't know if it's his prime necessarily, but definitely like a younger Ron Simmons. Arn Anderson, it's crazy because like you see someone like Dax Harwood today, and he obviously he's pretty much just cosplays Arn Anderson, but it's amazing how similar they were. Like I don't know if how old Arn is here, but it's probably pretty similar to what Dax is. So that just stuck out to me, especially in the promo. Like there's the exact same. But yeah, it was a fun brawl. Always love seeing all these guys, some blood. But the one thing about this match that stuck out to me was like the energy of it. Like it felt like these guys hated each other. Like it sucked me in that way. So it was definitely believable in that sense. But yeah, the screwy finish, like again, like we just had the ref bump switcheroo of the title before this, and now we have a double pin. It's like, and then we're not even at the main event yet. So it's like lots of shenanigans to close out this show.
There's a lot of questionable officiating, I've noticed. Like it's an underlying theme throughout this entire thing is the officiating. And now we have an advertisement for Wrestle War 91 with War Games featuring Doc Hendricks here as Uncle Sam, which was, I don't know.
Awful. It was all awful.
I might watch this show just for shits and giggles later. Like all sports are canceled in Canada. Like the World Junior Hockey Championships postponed. Leafs
Oh no.
games canceled. So I'll need to watch bloody something tonight, but what it won't be
Something bloody.
is this next match. USA versus Japan, the Pat O'Connor Tag Team Tournament Finals, Pearl Harbor Revenge. Steiners and Saito and Muta, the International Tag Team Champions and the Universal whatever. Like they said universal, they said international. Make up your bloody mind.
No, but they're all just making it up on the fly.
Or they just meant and misread something like I just did here. But great Muta with the enziguri. And I love that they put over the enziguri as a dangerous move.
I'm a big fan of a good Inzi.
Like Owen Hart, just the master of it there. Shawn Michaels collapsing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a really good one here. A Steiner line. Muta is crotched here. And JR says, well, that's going to ruin his date.
Yeah. God, JR never changes.
Godspeed to JR. Like just came back last night after kicking cancer's ass. What a fucking
Hell
hero.
yeah. Hell
The
yeah.
man. Anyone who like who beats cancer is a hero in my mind. That's well, what's my dad did. He beat that. So
For
shout out,
sure.
shout out. Love you, pops. Muda crotched here. I already said that. Handspring elbow. And then they try to ring Rick's bell. And I think they called it sneaky tactics here. That's somewhat offensive there, Jim. Like, come on here, sneaky Japanese thing. No. Scott hits a really nice tiger, but that really nice release tiger bomb that Scott Steiner likes to break out once in a while is very good. Spike pile driver. Rick hits a sunset flip here, and Team USA,
USA, USA
wins the Pat O'Connor trophy.
Of course,
Jim
I mean, of
Herd comes
course
out
they
to
do.
present it. Jim Herd, boo.
Yeah, it's been a long tournament up to this point, so I was like, okay, yeah, you got to figure the U.S. is gonna win. So, although they did have a relationship with New Japan, I don't know if it was at this point or if it was later. So feasibly, you could have seen Japan win this as well, but yeah, it was what it was. Like all these matches kind of blend together, honestly. But I always love watching the Steiners. Even to this day, they're one of my favorite tag teams of all time. Even though they're a little bit before my time, I always love going back and watching because it's so clear how many teams nowadays are patterned after these guys, especially old Braun. It's crazy. Like obviously, it's Rick's son, so obviously there's going to be a resemblance. But you could tell in the promo, so they win the match, they have the whole celebration. It's especially evident when Rick takes the mic, how just on the nose he is with Bron Breakker. So that was a little funny note that I saw, but yeah, good stuff. Good stuff from all around.
Yeah, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree there. So that's the end of the Pat O'Connor Tag Tournament. There we have Steiner's lifting up that big WrestleMania 4 trophy, except Bad News Brown wasn't there to smash it into pieces. No, that was Bret Hart. Bad News
I
Brown
always
won
get
it.
those confused.
I'm when you're 37 years old, your brain starts to kind of go on you, but Yes. We have reached the culmination here, Kyle.
All right, this is the part where I leave. You have a good rest of your podcast, and I'll just leave and do anything else.
Yeah, this is where you can give your plugs, apronbump.com, going through Ring of Honor, all that. Yeah, so the Black Scorpion here. This angle has been going on since about the summer.
Who's the Black Scorpion?
The 1989 Denver Broncos, Mephisto, Chef, Eric Cartman's mother. Yeah, this whole deal. So the Black Scorpion's been this mysterious masked figure who was, I think, either originally portrayed or voiced by Ole Anderson, because Ole could put over the deep kind of voice. And it's someone from his past is back here to haunt Sting. Is it the Ultimate Warrior because Blade Runners? Is it someone else? Is it someone stupid? Is it the higher power? Is it Vince McMahon? It's me, Austin. Oh, son of a bitch. What was another mass thing that ended up being something stupid? I can't think of it. Maybe it was the higher power.
Too many to count.
So Black Scorpion, this figure, it's like, you know, I'm going to expose Sting, or I'm going to do this and that. Teasing that he is a former partner or a former associate of Sting. And when we eventually reveal who it is, not quite. And he's been attacking him, cutting promos and whatnot, and trying to something. Sting here is the world heavyweight champion, the big gold belt, the WCW title, because the NWA didn't dissolve from the company until about 93. Because I reviewed a show recently, I think it was Beach Blast.
Yeah, because they were talking, and I forgot to like research this, but they were talking like it was like almost like a transition into WCW at this point. Is that kind of how it was? Because it's the, like you said, it's the NWA world title. It was the NWA tag team titles. So like, I don't know what the situation was there, because I didn't live through it, so I don't really remember it. But
well, I think it was something to do with the Turner, when Ted Turner got involved, which was not long after this. That's when it would be actually World Championship Wrestling, but with NWA titles, because WCW would get their own. They had the WCW title, then they had the worldwide or the world title. It was some weird thing, but when you had both
titles, the international title.
International. That's it. Yep. Thank you. And that merged when the NWA dissolved from Ted Turner, and then Dan the Beast Severin and Chris Candido would trade the title back and forth not long after that. The same title that Shane Douglas whipped down to the ground and said that it could kiss his ass.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. But this is Big Goldie. This is the Reign of Terror. This is the Triple H title that I'm looking at right over here to my upper right. That you can't see, but
I believe you.
Yeah. Okay. So the NWA title's on the line with the Black Scorpion, Dick the Bruiser. I just noticed how huge that man is.
That is literally the human version of Popeye the Sailor Man. This Dick the Bruiser. He is a mean looking fella.
And this match, of course, is also title versus mask. The Black Scorpion here comes out with several Black Scorpions. Like, I'm seeing double, full Black Scorpions.
This whole thing, like, I don't know how long this like entrance lasted. It had to be at least 4 Pat O'Connor matches.
It was. This is why the Pat O'Connor tournament was padding for time. Ha ha ha. Pun intended. JR is like, I'm wearing Gordon Solie's bifocals here, and Paul Heyman is teasing the aforementioned, this is someone from Sting's past. And there's this weird UFO type thing just comes down from the ceiling. And that reminds me of the friggin' egg that the gobbledygooker popped out of just before this.
Oh, yeah, shoot, that's right.
RIP headphone users. Oh, and these are only he cuts the microphone. And it's like, these are only messengers. There was only one Scorpion. There was only one Highlander.
It's like the Shockmaster about to debut.
I think it was Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget was about to debut here with that voice.
Yeah, as well as like four scorpions, right, come out?
At least. And then the real one comes into the ring here. And yeah, this match here breaks down into rest hold. Sting has a press slam. And there is actually Black Scorpion signs in the crowd. So it's over. Somehow.
I guess. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe coming in cold without context of the build. It didn't really tie me in. This match kind of plodded around for a long, long time. The last few minutes was fun, but man, is, you know what's funny though? So I went, because I looked at the card before the show, like I said, and in the main event, it had Sting versus the Black Scorpion, and in parentheses, it said Ric Flair. Spoiler alert, everybody. But I wish I didn't know it was Ric Flair, just so I could like see if I could figure it out just by watching it. Because I don't know, because like I said, I knew going in, so I don't know how obvious it was if you didn't know. But it was funny in hindsight, with that knowledge, watching Black Scorpion try to wrestle not in a Ric Flair way. Like, for example, there was one point where Sting was on the ground, and Black Scorpion looked like he was about to do like a Ric Flair knee drop, but then he like stutter stepped and did an elbow drop instead. So little things like that throughout the match, I think honestly probably slowed the match down a little bit and made it a little more, because Ric Flair couldn't do his Ric Flair things. That was just an interesting aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting dynamic here where it's like, okay, so you're not going to wrestle as Ric Flair. That's kind of like asking, you know, Kurt Angle or Bret Hart not to wrestle like them because you're kind of masked by this different thing that you're doing, pun intended. And I look at the, like, that's Ric Flair's like mouth here. I can tell that's mm-hmm. him. This match just goes back and forth here. It's long, it's plodding. I didn't take that many notes here, but Scorpion is working Sting over, you know, ramming him to the cage. Sting eventually fights back. He hulks up, he stings up or whatever, goes for the deathlock. Scorp tries to escape, and then Sting knocks him off the top rope, hits a flying tackle off the top rope, and retains the title here. Sting is still the champion. And in a moment here that I don't think I'd watch NXT War Games when this came out. Because there was a moment here that paralleled that very thing by father and son, no less. And that's the Steiners coming up with bolt cutters.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's a good point.
And they were struggling with bolt cutters. Like, bolt cutters are hard. They're difficult. I know. And Rick here is just struggling with it. And I'm flash forwarded to NXT War Games, like what, just maybe a little while after I watched this. Or before I watched this, and sure enough, Bron Breakker is having the time of his life.
I wonder if that was like a callback to this. When they did it.
It had to be like, maybe yeah. I'll get blocked by Bron Breakker by asking them this question. But all the Scorpions here try to get into the ring here and try and, you know, prevent Ric Flair from being unmasked. Spoiler alert again. Sting and Bruiser are trying to work everyone over. The Horsemen come out. The Steiners come out here. And I wrote down here, the last thing I wrote here was Dick the Bruiser would just end all these guys in the ring with the snap of the finger. he's old absolutely. School. And mask comes off, it's Ric Flair. Like, shocker, surprise.
I thought the reveal was super weak. The way they did it, because it's almost like it was like if you were actually trying to rip somebody's mask off, like how they would react. But it's pro wrestling. You want to like rip the mask off and have like the camera on their face and see them react. But the way they did it, Ric Flair, you could like barely see his face. You just saw like the back of his head, and the commentary says, "Oh, it's Ric Flair," and then you're watching it and you're like, "Oh, I guess I didn't really see him," but because Ric Flair just kind of sprints out after the mask gets ripped off. So I thought the reveal was kind of lackluster.
Yeah, and Ric Flair would actually go on to beat Sting for the title like a month after this.
Right. Yeah, sounds about right.
Yep, and then he would go on to be the Real World's Champion. So there's another history lesson for you there. So, yeah, that was a messy show. That was a messy, messy Starrcade. And Starrcade's supposed to be their WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we have here, Kyle, this is the point of the show where we're wrapping up. Plug your shit, man. Let us know where we can find you, listen to you, and what you do.
Yeah, well, once again, Fretz, thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure. Starrcade 90 was a I didn't know what to expect coming into it, but it was a good little time capsule. Like I said, I never watched a show from this era, so parts of it were fun and parts of it were just silly, but a fun time here nonetheless. But yeah, you can check out my podcast, the Apron Bump Podcast, not Apron Bumps, the Apron Bump Podcast. You can find apronbump.com to really find anything related to me, all my social media, wherever you I'm available, wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as YouTube. What else? Apron Bump on Twitter is probably where I'm most active. I do retro reviews on my podcast as well, so if you like what Fretz does and the Wrestle Addicts crew, you'll like what I do. Cover several different timelines, big and small, so I'll cover WWF, both from the mid 90s and early 2000s, as well as like WCW, ECW. But I also get into things like Ring of Honor, TNA, Progress Wrestling, and whatever I feel like. So if you want a little something new, maybe a little variety, maybe a company you've never followed before and you want to revisit it and relive it, check out Apron Bump. And yeah, I think that's about it.
All right. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Follow us at addict_wrestle on Twitter, Wrestle Addict Radio on Instagram, our Patreon, patreon.com/wrestleaddictradio, $5 a month. You get some stuff. I'll get some stuff coming out in the next little bit, I hope. Also listen to the Kings of the Rings podcast, streaming every Wednesday on Twitch and YouTube, and making his return, actually, maybe by the time you hear this, is our good brother Zach, Mr. YLP, the Young Lions Perspective, making their long awaited return. And I got to give a big shout out. I got to give flowers to our former podcaster on Wrestle Addict Radio, but he's still a good brother, still a good friend. Mance, hope you're doing well, bud. Hope you're doing safe, staying safe. And yep, that's been it.